Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 347 for comics originally released on April 2nd, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Aquaman and the Others. Drew, did you ever watch the Batman, the Brave and the Bold animated series?
No, never have.
The take on Aquaman there, and I just mentioned this as an aside, was kind of a very boisterous, bragging kind of, let me tell you the story of thus and so. The grand tale of whatever, you know. And Batman kind of humored him or whatever, because he was actually, you know, a pretty capable hero of Aquaman in there. And Aquaman's been the butt of jokes for years. I cannot help but look at this title of Aquaman and the Others and think of it in light of that take of Aquaman. This is the tale of Aquaman and the Others. They were there too, I suppose. You know, kind of like they're an afterthought. And it's hilarious because these other characters are some of, like, the half dozen or dozen or so new characters we've really gotten in the New 52. And I find it a little hard to believe that Aquaman is getting a second title. I mean, his main title's selling around, I don't know, 34,000 units or something. He's a cool character. I like him. Giving this team a title, having him headline it, I think is a good choice, but I've got reservations as to will the market accept another Aquaman title. But you look at these characters, and really beyond that, the new ones we got were like Starling over in Birds of Prey, a Bunker and Skitter over in Teen Titans. And really, for me, after that, the list, I would have to stop and think about what are the characters we've got new from the New 52. So I've been looking forward to this one for a bit. Now, have you been reading Aquaman?
No.
Oh, okay. So do you even have any idea who these others are?
No.
All right. Well, how well were they introduced for you?
It wasn't bad. I thought they did a really good job of ramping me up. You know, I got to see a little bit of each of the characters and the idea of this artifact that they each possess and giving them powers and kind of failing them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I thought it was a pretty good little introduction.
That's what I was thinking too, but I came at it having read every other appearance they'd been in, so I figured I was biased, and that's why I was curious as an actual introduction to these characters how well it would work for you. I'm glad to hear that it was well. It did get a little almost formulaic, where it's, let's introduce this person, let them try to use their powers, and oh, it doesn't work! But I gotta say, as a first issue goes, they introduce all the members, the team gathers, the threat is introduced, the tone, the style, the nature of the series is, I think, fairly well set up in this issue. You know, I would be hard-pressed to name anything else that I really need or expect out of a first issue that this didn't deliver. I mean, how about you?
Yeah, I think you are exactly right. They brought the team together, so to speak, and introduced us to all the characters a little bit. Enough, I think, to get a sense of who they are, introduced in, you know, kind of the big bad that they're all going to be facing, and got you, I think, on board, enough information to get you on board. And this feels to me like a very classic comic. It feels like it's rooted in maybe an older style of storytelling, and I kind of like that. It seems a little almost retro to me, that it's not... It didn't seem as dark. You know, it seemed a little more fun, a little more... I mean, there was action and fighting and things, but it seemed a little more rooted in superhero action adventure comics.
The retro thing isn't something I had really thought about, but now that you mention it, it does kind of remind me of almost an 80s style, or even, in some respects, a classic, almost like JLA JSA kind of a story, where part of it is just little sub-chapters with individual characters and then the whole team together at one point. But I think it reads well for a modern audience. It's a nice blend of the two styles, I think.
Yeah, and I think folks that are discouraged by some of the house style of the New 52 would be encouraged by a title like this, because it feels like a more of a classic superhero storytelling.
So house style, you mean writing, not art?
Yeah.
Okay. I would totally agree with that. I think if they had done more things kind of along this line where I felt it had a good kind of payoff within the issue, in other words, a return on that investment, versus, oh, it's the first chapter of a story, so we'll introduce you to one of the characters. We'll get around to the others later, you know, which is what happens in a lot of books. I think if more DC titles are written more along these lines, I think it'd just be better. It would have been, I think, maybe nice or smart if at the end of this, maybe in place of a letters page or the Channel 52 thing or something, they had maybe a one-page thing of, hey, here are the others, and if you want to learn more, go check out these two trades or whatever. Because I think they've only been in two story arcs in Aquaman, but I am not positive about that. I didn't have time to do the research on that.
That would have been fun, and it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if they're contractually obligated to jam that Channel 52 stuff in every single issue, but it seems like it.
It seems like it's the current editorial page, and my respect for it has never been high and has dropped lower when it's gotten to be just two pages of art from some book that they then do some production work on to turn it into an ad.
Yeah, and I'm reading fewer DC titles than you, but I read enough of them that I really get sick of seeing it. So I can imagine it's making you pull your hair out.
I am not certain where these two pages of the New 52 came from, but they've done it from, you know, one of the Green Lantern books, one of the Superman Wonder Woman issues and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, I don't want to see the pages until I actually see the pages. It does kind of drive me nuts. And this is a case where, since these characters are new to so many readers, pointing out which trades have them and stuff just seems like a really good cross-marketing opportunity. You know, if you liked this, go check this out. So, missed opportunity there.
Definitely a missed opportunity. I like these characters, though. I've just been introduced to them. I think they're interesting enough to want to follow. Having not been a steady reader of Aquaman, it'll be weird, but I think I'll probably continue with this and read the companion book and not the standalone Aquaman book, which is kind of odd, probably. But this is kind of compelling, and I feel like I'm on the ground floor of this, kind of. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of experience it with everybody else. Nobody else is really that far ahead of me on this. You know, there's not eons of issues and issues of others' material that is established canon. And so I can kind of get in on the ground floor.
Yeah.
That's fun for new readers and for readers that don't have the history with some of the characters. You know, it gives us a level playing field to be able to experience it like everybody else.
Well, and they struck a nice balance between these characters do have a little bit of a history, and if you know it, great, but if you don't, they introduce the characters very well. So they're not reliant on that history, but if you want to learn more, there's something more to learn. So I like that. And I like how this book was not Aquaman and his supporting cast, but Aquaman and this other team of the others, which is, again, still a weird name. But I think it's odd because I can definitely see where people may do what you do of reading this book, not the Aquaman title. Because if you're not really into Aquaman, there's no real other reason to read Aquaman. Here, there's a couple of characters that people might legitimately like in and of themselves. So it'll be interesting to see how the sales of the two titles go moving forward, if they treat this as a separate book, or if they try to cross over the two, or whatever. I'm curious what their plans are.
Yeah, I'm also curious about the Future's End connection.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be an allusion to a future Future's End title, and I wonder if this is going to be one of many crossover titles that bleed in and out of Future's End and crossover, or it may be the de facto crossover title, or it's just all books are pointing towards Future's End.
Or if this was just a tease, and if they don't pick up on it at all.
Yes. Yeah. Any of those things it could be.
I got the impression they would pick up on it more, but I wasn't certain.
And it's a really cool panel, mm-hmm. and a really cool tease, and it makes me a little more interested in what in the Future's End. But if you weren't, then would that sway you against continuing with this book? You don't really have enough information, I don't think, to
I don't think the stuff with Future's End was such that it would scare somebody off continuing with this book. At least I hope it wouldn't. And I'm sure it will for some, but I don't think it should. It's going to be interesting, like you said, to see how much various titles cross over to that or not and whatnot.
And that'll be super challenging for editorial, I would think. You know, they seem to be having a little bit of problem with some of their monthly books, mm-hmm. schedule-wise, and if some of these monthlies are dipping in and out of a weekly title, yeah, I hope it's not going to be too much of a challenge.
Flip side, if you're going to do that, doing it with a title that just started and therefore you could have gotten some issues in the can and pretty much guarantee they'd come out on time, not a bad move.
Might be. All in all, I think this book is written well. Dan Jurgens does a really good job. He's an old pro, so I guess you would mm-hmm. probably expect the writing quality to be very high, and it does not disappoint. The art is by, is it Lan Medina? Does that sound right?
I was going to go with Medina, okay. But I could be very mistaken on that.
And
I wish they had pronunciation guides on this stuff.
They really need to. It's a solid art style. It's fine. There's nothing in his art that would put anybody off. It's actually quite competent. So I enjoyed that. You couple those things together, and you know, I'm interested in the story, and I want to stick around. So for me, this was a 4.
Yeah, same here. For me, strong 4 out of 5. Good first showing in terms of a first issue. Hit all the things I think it needed to. I'm real curious to see where it goes. And again, while I don't know that I necessarily would have greenlighted an Aquaman second title, I think this was definitely the right way to do it, to do it at all. And again, I think these characters, since they're some of the new parts of the new 52, definitely deserve a title, and keeping Aquaman in there just makes sense. So, shall we move on to our Marvel title?
Yeah.
This is from the Ultimate Comics line. It's Ultimate Comics. It's confusing because it's Ultimate Comics All New Spider-Man number 200, but on the inside it's Ultimate Comics number 200. It's ultimately confusing as to the full title if it's just Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, whatever. And the whole numbering of 200 is a little bit of a sales shenanigan. Have you been following the Ultimate Spider-Man stuff?
I think I read the first trade, and I read the Spider-Man miniseries. I really liked that, and have not really been reading it as a regular reader.
Well, it's been months since we got an issue of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. I mean, number 28 shipped back in October on the 23rd. We then got, I think, like 3 issues of the Cataclysm Ultimate Spider-Man miniseries. He's been in a number of other books, but it's felt like a little bit of a dry spell for the character just because of the Galactus attack on that world. Which, of course, you can see by all the carnage and destruction throughout this issue that's not present. Again, you know, the ramifications on this world seem to be kind of minimal. Jumping to number 200, yes, I suppose it's justified in some sense if you count all the different Ultimate Spider-Man issues and whatnot, but it was clearly a gimmick. And this story just struck me as strange timing. It's really focusing, it's all about the 2-year anniversary of this world's Peter Parker dying. And it had some great reminiscing about him, and, you know, Miles Morales, the current one, is in there, as are a lot of the other supporting cast over the years. They all get a few moments to kind of shine or whatnot, but it's also about a character that's 2 years dead. And it's really strange timing, given the mainstream Spider-Man's coming back, like, any day now. Miles Morales is the Spider-Man in this universe, has been for a couple of years. I was expecting him to, I don't know, maybe get a little more focus in this issue. What were your thoughts on that?
You know, I didn't look at it that way. I came in pretty, you know, having very little experience with this character. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a different Miles Morales than I remember in the Spider-Man mini, and different than that first trade. He seems a lot more mature and everything. I really liked this issue. I really thought it did a great job of honoring Peter Parker and Spider-Man. And it blurs the lines on, well, not really Peter Parker because he's, you know, it's the Ultimate Universe. But it was still a lot of fun for me to see mm-hmm. all these different characters reminisce about him and where would what would be going on if he was still alive and where would he be. And And there was some really touching stuff. The Kitty Pryde thing was really heartwarming.
Yeah.
I love some of the funny bits with Iceman between the two fire people. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, that was fun.
I laughed out loud at that. I love that Stark didn't make it, but sent a nice catering spread. That was great. All these characters were really cool and written really, really well. Bendis, where sometimes I find him insufferable in the way he writes so much dialogue and doesn't really move things along. I felt it worked really well here, and I thought this was a really great. He took a lot of characters and wrote for them really well, and I really enjoyed the interactions between the characters. I liked the art. I thought it was great. I loved
the story. The art was fantastic. Yeah,
I thought it was a really nice story. It felt sincere. And you know, we've had these kind of trumped up anniversary issues. We had the Nova 100 and, you know, the Detective 27 earlier. So we've had some of these other anniversary type and milestone issues that may or may not really be coinciding, you know, the way they were supposed to. So I don't really mind that too much. I kind of like the fact that they, you know, make it special somehow.
It justified giving it a lot more pages, and they really used the pages well. And your point about the characterization and some of that is right on the nose. This is something that is almost all character. It's really not much in terms of, ooh, there's a big fight scene or action or plot or something, mystery or anything. It's who are these characters, getting to know them, getting to feel for them, empathize with them and such. I just, as much as I loved that, and I did, it was really well done for that, I can't help but think it would have had a lot more resonance if this was like a done-in-one issue in between arcs of an ongoing Ultimate Spider-Man series versus almost seeming like a one-shot in some respects.
Well, for me, it had a better effect. It actually engaged me with a character that I was disengaged from.
Fair enough.
Excited me about the character and the world and the universe that I did not care about at all, and made me take a second look at the relaunch of Ultimate Spider-Man number one that's coming up, and thinking, you know what, I'm going to give that a shot now when I wasn't before because of how much I enjoyed this issue. This send-off to that chapter has catapulted me into the beginning of the next chapter, which is just probably what they wanted to do around the marketing table. And so it worked for me, you know, it engaged me and got me excited about what this can be. Mm-hmm. So I felt like the Ultimate line was too young for me before, and it does skew a little younger. It does feel a little younger, younger than I'm used to reading. But I like this issue so much that I want to stick around. And so when they do launch number one here in a month or two, I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to pick it up from the beginning.
The Miles Morales one?
Yeah.
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 That was clearly then a success for this issue. And I can totally understand that. I think it's a case of where you had been a casual reader of the book and I had been a hardcore long-term reader, that kind of colored our perception some. For mm-hmm. you, it re-engaged. For me, it came down to they had just had a little bit of a hiatus with the character, and they kind of needed to re-engage me, whereas I think this would have been a much stronger thing for me if it's, okay, here's a quiet moment between, you know, the big adventures that Miles Morales has been having lately.
And for those of you who like art a lot, if art really presses your buttons and drives the train, there are some amazing, amazing double page spreads here that there's so many characters happening and so much detail. It's just beautiful. And it's Dave Marquez on art, David LaFuente on art. I'm not sure who's doing what. There's a bunch of people on art.
They had
Sarah Pacelli, Mark Brooks, some Mark Bagley. I don't know who did what, but there's some beautiful stuff.
Who did which sequences? Some of them, LaFuentes did the Kitty Pryde sequence, Pacelli did the Miles Morales sequence, Mark Brooke the Gwen Stacy sequence. I'm assuming those are the two-page spreads and such.
They looked very similar, though. The style didn't look that different to me, so that's cool. That's cool that they all, because they're really impressive. Really impressive spreads. Probably worth the price of the book itself. I thought that the story was great as well. If you've never read Ultimate, I think this is kind of a cool little introduction to the Ultimate universe. There's enough characters in here to get you up to speed, kind of, on a lot of them. I mean, they have a lot of history that, of course, I'm not aware of, but I didn't feel like I was left in the dark, really.
You may not be able to recite their backstory, but you got to know the characters.
Yeah, I did. And Miles' friend, what's the kid's name? Genki?
Mm-hmm.
Genki Lee? He's a great character, and you get a good bunch of screen time with him. Actually, probably a little more than Miles Morales, which is probably why I think that's why you were kind of saying he didn't get as much screen time, because a lot of the supporting characters got more screen time than he did, and he was the title character.
Exactly. And but again, that's not a problem, because like you said, this really introduces and reintroduces a lot of these characters really effectively.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. It was heartwarming. It was a great introduction. I loved the art, and so I gave it a 5.
I can see that. It didn't quite make the 5 for me. It was a definite 4 out of 5. It's funny because at times people really give Bendis a hard time for decompression and all this other stuff, and sometimes very rightfully so. His books can be wordy, whatever. And there are a few places here. There's a lot of dialogue and such, but there's also a few places here where Bendis basically stepped back and just let the art tell the story. Sometimes just for a couple of panels here and there, just for a couple of moments. Other times for a little bit longer than that. Certainly the 2-page splashes really let some artists shine and such. And I think that's really cool storytelling. So there's a lot here that they should be very proud of. It just, again, for me, the Ultimate Comics Spider-Man had little momentum kind of going into this that I was trying to remember where we had left off with the character other than the Cataclysm stuff.
Yeah.
But this was definitely a fun issue. I like seeing this type of character issue. Let's, again, pause the action, focus on the characters in a more intimate setting. This is not entirely, but predominantly all set in one living room. And it doesn't feel like just talking heads, even though, frankly, that's a lot of what it is. So, great stuff. Definitely recommend it.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah, Boom Book, Suicide Risk.
This is number 12. You hadn't read any of this stuff, had you?
I read the first 3.
Okay.
And made a cut, and then picked it back up with 11, and then read 12.
When I opened this and realized it's part 2 of 3, I'm like, ooh, maybe this wasn't a great one to pick.
Yeah, I went back one.
And good. This is a series that, when it started out, the basic premise was that superpowered people were kind of inexplicably just coming about, and there was a problem. More villains than heroes. The heroes were getting their butts kicked. The cops were getting caught in the crossfire. It was not a fun situation, much like you might imagine it would play out if real people in our world got superpowers. And it focused on a police officer, Leo Winters, and he got kind of caught in the crossfire in one of these, in the first issue, one of these fights, really badly injured, later winds up getting superpowers. Story progresses from there. And this issue, as the whole series has, really focuses on Leo and what's become of him, his relationship with this character known as Requiem, who is a mass murderer and just generally not a nice guy, and the inherent conflict the two have. And certainly this issue I don't think would have been a great jumping on point. I think you could have figured out what's going on, but I don't know how many good jumping on points this series has had since it started because of the nature of the story it's telling. It's one of those where the status quo just kind of keeps going, keeps evolving, and kind of a roller coaster ride and whatnot. It's, you can get on board later, but you got to hang on tight if you do.
Yeah, I think they had a couple planned jumping on point. I think one at issue 9 and one at issue 5,
mm-hmm.
And I missed those trains, so I didn't hop back on the appointed areas. So, but they did have a couple that they had touted anyway as either self-contained stories or reintroductory chapters for people. So there are some places, and I don't know if they have one planned for after this as well. But
I would hope so.
Yeah, this was really cool to see where this series has progressed in the half a dozen to 10 issues that I've sat out.
Mm-hmm.
and a lot of fun stuff has happened, it looks like. A lot of interesting progression with Mr. Winters, and he's different than I remember him.
he's gone through a lot.
He's gone through a lot, but very interesting character, and very interesting bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
The supporting cast were really interesting. His family really stole the show, I think, for me, and I really want more of them. I'm excited to see what's happening with those characters, and I think we're going to get that in future issues, it looks like. I think there's a lot of great stuff in this book, and I kind of feel bad that I didn't stick with it through the lean times, or my perceived lean times, early on.
That's one of the reasons why, even when a title has a bit of a down spell, I'll usually, you know, kind of sit through it or whatever. Because that way, if and when it picks up, I'm there for it. I see it picking up as it's doing so. And I've got that backstory, the whole through line, to really appreciate those peaks, even if it means there are a couple of valleys you got to go through. And it's like, oh, well, okay, not so great this month. I don't think this has ever been bad. I think they're telling a little bit of a bigger story than maybe a 22-page comic comfortably fits. And therefore, you know, they only have those so many pages a month. I'm thinking if I were to go back through and reread the dozen issues they've got out so far in like a single sitting, I would have a different take on it than I have having read it monthly. I think it would carry through better there, because they don't waste a lot of time at the beginning kind of, okay, let's reset the scene. They do enough to get me back in the story, but I think if it was all fresh in my mind at one point, I'd be even more impressed than I am. But they're telling some interesting stuff here.
I agree with that, and I think that there are a couple trades, and if you're intrigued by anything we're saying here today, that'd be a good place to go, is hit those trades, and I think there's two trades out, Volume 1 and Volume 2, and then you'll probably have to grab a couple single issues or wait for the third one at that point. But there's a lot of good stuff here, and it is a different character. The character's move has progressed a lot, but it's very interesting, and the story is... when it was first pitched in the first issue, you thought, eh, okay, that sounds somewhat familiar, but it was executed well.
Mm-hmm.
And, it didn't go enough. It didn't move the needle enough for me to stick with it. But, you know, I was reading a lot of books. So something had to go. And so I let this one go, but it seems like it has amped up the storytelling to a much more unique tale at this point. It's doing some really interesting things and some really good interactions between the protagonist and antagonist here that I think is great stuff. And so it really engaged me and pulled me back in.
Well, that's good to hear. I was afraid you would read this and be like, what's going on? What was even the premise of this book and whatnot? Because I could see somebody reading just this issue and being like totally perplexed. Even if they read the first one, it's like, how did it get from there to here and whatnot?
Because he was, you know, he had his partner was in the hospital, and it was, you know, like a cop tale basically at the beginning. So it's made some movements.
First issue, it was almost like how do regular cops survive in a world with supervillains?
Yeah, yeah, and this is not that at all.
I would not have expected them to get here from there, but they did in a very coherent manner, very, very good manner. It's funny because there are aspects of this issue that kind of remind me of kind of mirroring some events that have happened in the mainstream title of late, but are happening very differently in here, and frankly, in some respects, better here. But I also think that people who like, say, the Injustice Gods Among Us and Injustice Year 2 storyline might like this kind of a book, because it's I don't say more realistic, because it's superheroes, supervillains, etc. It's not the least bit realistic. But it's got more of a sense of consequences, a sense of things are happening, things are changing. It's not really a safe world out there. But, you know, if you're smart and in the right place, you can survive by, you know, tenacity, luck, you know, whatever. It's survivable, but not easy, I guess. It's a very interesting vibe they've got in this book. There are a lot of characters doing a lot of things, a lot of agendas going on. And the characters are acting reasonably smart. It's not like, oh, geez, that was a stupid thing for so-and-so to have done. And sometimes characters do act stupid, but I'm impressed with this book. I like this book. I think I would be, like I said earlier, even more so if I were to reread it in kind of rapid succession and kind of get the full story in my head all at once.
And I think I need to do that and catch back up and fill in the gaps for myself. I mean, the conceit in the beginning was, you know, you can purchase superpowers. You're not sure what you're going to get, but you can purchase superpowers, and that's the risk. That's the suicide risk. You don't know what kind of superpower you're going to get and what's going to happen with that power. Or if it'll just kill you, yeah. And we're beyond that now, at least in the 11 and 12. It didn't touch on that at all with any other characters or anything. We're just focusing on the main character, which makes sense after a dozen issues. So.
Yeah. But it also shows how much can happen in a dozen issues.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at a Marvel or DC book and you've gotten two story arcs, but they're kind of forgettable. Not really much has changed in the life of the character. It's surprising.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on here, and I won't lie and say I fully understand it all, but I'm enjoying what I'm reading, and I'm excited about what's happening on the page enough so that I want to backtrack, reread the comics that I should have not dropped in the first place now, I'm realizing, because it's a strong book. And you can just tell it's a strong book. The art's fine. The story's engaging. Characters are really interesting. So it's a 4 out of 5 for me. And regretting that I ever dropped the book in the first place.
Well, that's good to hear. I was real pleased, obviously, with the writing. The art, I'm very happy with. Nice style. Works well. It's got kind of a classic superhero look to it. Yeah, fun book. Well worth reading. And get the back issues, Drew, and let me know what you think when you've had a chance to read them.
Now, Mike Carey wrote them all. Is Elena Casagrande the standard artist on all of them?
I don't think so, but I would have to look up who the artist was on all of them. I think they may have switched artists at one point.
Okay.
But I could be wildly mistaken for that, and if so, I apologize. Yeah.
There's a couple Boom books in a row that we've enjoyed, so it's nice to see them putting out some good stuff.
Boom, yeah. Again, I was really impressed with their panel at San Diego this past year. They're putting out some quality stuff. I'm still really enjoying the Midas Flesh. We talked about Loki Ragnarok and Roll.
It came out on time.
Yeah, they're doing some good stuff.
And then we've got some Perez stuff to look forward to at the end of the year. So.
Have they announced what that's going to be?
No, just, you know, we're close.
Not close enough.
He confides in me.
Of course he does. Of course he does.
Me and 2,000 other people that were in line to see him. So,
what else do you get this week?
I just got the chance to listen to the preview spotlight, and I thought that was really fantastic. Really good mix of people sending in clips, and I think it was like an hour and 20 minutes of really good stuff. A lot of stuff that I missed, and I pride myself on scouring this previews each and every time I get it in my grubby little paws, but I always, every time I listen to this thing, there's stuff that I miss and I have to take a second look at, and I'm like, oh yeah, duh, why did I not catch this the first time around, because this is something that's right up my alley, I should check out. That's exactly the way it should work, so please keep sending the clips in for that, because it's so much fun listening to other folks that are passionate about comics that you didn't know existed. It's great. Great stuff.
Well, and when this episode goes up, the next round of solicits should be starting to show online if they're not already there. I usually go to Comic Book Resources. They've got a tag for solicitations. It's real easy to find stuff. And then send stuff in for next month.
I think Sam posted that he saw there's some DC relaunches coming.
They're relaunching Teen Titans.
So we were curious if they were going to follow Marvel's lead, and I think we have that answer now. So Suicide Squad's coming, and Teen Titans, and can Nightwing be far behind?
They're relaunching Suicide Squad?
Yes.
I hadn't heard that.
It's not Suicide Squad. It's the new Suicide Squad.
Oh, that's totally different. Just like the new Titans are going to have a whole new roster of the same characters. The interview on that one kind of surprised me. The other big thing that's news, as we record this on Thursday night, this will go up on Monday, Amazon's going to acquire Comixology.
That's interesting.
Big news, I think. I think it's potentially really a win-win, because Comixology is kind of the big player in that space. There's a lot of additional resources and whatnot Amazon can bring to bear on that. They've done a lot with the ebooks and whatnot. I'm very curious as to how that's going to play out. And
yeah, I think it's a win-win for the industry, because Comixology was a big fish, but it was a small pond in a niche market that you had to be actively seeking it out. We've got, with Amazon, you've got this world of housewives that are plugged into that can stumble across comics and pretty easily now. And oh, I think sky's the limit. And the interesting thing, bouncing off of what Laramie said in that interview, was how far behind the sales were at Comixology. That might be telling to why this happened. They didn't have the infrastructure to keep up with the expansion.
Well, and I think if you put the technical resources of Amazon, the programming, the knowledge they have on e-commerce and large-scale websites and stuff like that behind Comixology and get a synergy going there, there's just a ton they could do, and it gives them potentially deeper pockets to make some serious investments for what could be just a really innovative future way of distributing stuff. Because as great as Comixology's platform is for comics, I mean, hell, they could leverage that for a magazine distribution thing too. And I'm sure Amazon would have the connections to make some of that happen if they want to even go that way. But
did you hear anything on if it's a name change, or is it going to be Amazon Comics, or is it going to continue to be Comixology? Do you know?
My understanding is it will continue to be, it'll be a subsidiary of Amazon. It'll stay as Comixology, and their headquarters will remain in New York, but I don't know that for absolute certain. It's one of those things where they've like literally just announced they've reached an agreement to for the acquisition. I don't think they've necessarily worked through all of the details and whatnot, but they're expecting the acquisition to close during like the second quarter of this year, so within the next few months. And again, it puts a big company behind Comixology. Not that I think they were struggling or anything of the sort. I mean, they were doing a phenomenal job, just as they were.
Oh yeah.
But again, getting the Amazon resources behind them gives them just a lot stronger foundation to be working off of, potentially again, resources for, you know, how they could be beefing up their infrastructure and leveraging again all of Amazon's technology.
Yeah, everyone in the world knows what Amazon is. Not everyone in the world knows what Comixology is.
Yeah,
and it's just really expands the opportunity. Oh, and you know, I think Amazon does a really robust bestseller list, so we'll be able to see some sales charts on digital comics that are a little more robust maybe than what Comixology
lets. We may not see that because they may have contractual obligations preventing that, but certainly the creators damn well ought to. When Laramie was saying they're 5 issues in and he doesn't know how A Voice in the Dark is doing digitally, I was amazed by that. Yeah. Disappointed.
Yeah.
There's no reason he shouldn't know within a day or two, if not real time.
He should have like a real time ticker. Another Voice in the Dark sold.
Yeah. But I mean, the other possibility, and who knows what direction they're going to go and stuff, but you've got Comixology, a software for reading comic books. Amazon, who has their Kindle, which has color, it's essentially their own little, you know, tablet and stuff. Can you imagine if they were to do a comic book centric Kindle?
I would buy it because the Kindle is nice. It really, like, the Paperwhite is great for reading books. I have a Samsung Galaxy Tab that I enjoy reading comics on immensely, but I am sure that, Kindle would do it better. And you know, if it was dedicated, oh man, if dedicated and maybe 12-inch tablet, oh, that would be fantastic.
If it was something that tied into like the Amazon Prime program where suddenly it's like you can borrow books through the Comixology app or whatever and read them.
Oh.
Man, I would get a Kindle so fast for something like that.
Yeah.
It would be a no-brainer. Again, I've got no idea what direction they're going to go in with this stuff. They probably don't know just yet, but very interesting news, and I just think it's really a good match between those companies, potentially.
It's exciting stuff.
Yeah. So what else did you read this week? Anything exciting? I had a bunch of 4 out of 5s this week. It was a really strong week for me.
Really strong week for me, too. Moon Knight number 2 I thought was still solid, and the thing I liked about it was a self-contained story again. And I know we talk about that a lot, that we don't like as you know, too many long story arcs, not enough done in ones, and maybe this is a sign of that Moon Knight's going to take and not do a lot of long story arcs and do some self-contained story. Well, two for two anyway. So that's kind
of
neat.
What got me with that issue is after setting up the look of the character in the first one with the business suit, the Mr. Knight and all that stuff.
Yeah.
This was basically a classic Moon Knight issue in terms of the look.
That was a surprise for me. And I hope we're going to at least go back to the suit look because it grew on me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a departure from what had gone before, but man, it worked. It was a fun take on the character. And I'm wondering if we're going to have a little bit of a schizophrenic book just like the character is.
You know, that wouldn't be such a bad thing. I can understand that. That's a pretty good tie in there.
It could work really well.
We had another strong number two, I felt, with Magneto. Two issues into that series, and I really like this book. Mm-hmm. I really like what they're doing. Really interesting stuff, and a take on a character that I dismissed and did not pay that much attention to, not having read a lot of X-books. So those first two issues, again, two for two in my mind, they're really great reads.
It was interesting because I was reading a number of books, not realizing to the end of them that was kind of it. They're over. We got the final issue of Invincible Universe. What else was the last issue? I think it was Stormwatch's last issue also. So it's one of those where, you know, my the titles I've got coming and going, there's a lot that have come and gone, but my net change is practically nothing. I think I'm maybe up an issue or two. No, I need to double check some of this. But it does surprise me how quickly some of these go and whatnot. I'm enjoying the Punisher stuff that Marvel's doing. The Loki Agent of Asgard is good. Some of what Marvel's coming out with, even the Deadpool versus Carnage, really worked for me this time around.
I thought She-Hulk has been on a downward trajectory from the high water mark of issue one, and I'm concerned that that book's not going to be able to sustain my interest much longer. I did not like 3 very much.
Interesting. It was, for me, it was 4 out of 5. It was solid. Okay.
I thought the new team on Detective was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting story and a really curious introduction to a character that I'm wondering, the way this character was introduced, what this person's role is going to be in the Bat family down the road, because it seemed pretty interesting. And pretty significant. I don't know. So
I am expecting a costume before too long.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're interested in first appearances, you might want to pick up a copy of Detective 30 if you don't already have one. Interesting, though. An interesting take. Thought Earth 2 was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was really strong. And Tom Taylor's doing good stuff there. And I think I agree with you that we've seen him do wonders with Injustice and do a great job with Earth 2. I think he should take on a mainstream title, and I'd love to see what he does within the confines of the New 52. So you won me over with that.
Well, that's good. One of the titles I sampled this week, I'd ordered the first issue of The Field from Image. Did you pick that one up?
Yeah, I have not read that one yet.
I read that one. Didn't pre-order the others. Glad.
Glad you didn't?
Yeah, this just fell flat for me. It didn't work. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad comic or that others won't enjoy it or whatever, but it just didn't click with me at all. And for these things where I'm putting them on a, you know, hey, I'm sampling this, to me that means they got to win me over. There's some titles.
Nobody would fault you for sampling a title when you're reading 60 a week.
I only had about, what was it this week? It was less than 60.
Yeah.
It was now, actually about 39. It was under 40. No, hang on. I've got this filtered. That's filtered right. That's weird. Fewer than I thought.
It's ebbs and flows. Another issue two for a book that I liked a lot more than you did was Starlight number 2, the Mark Miller book, and I thought that was really good. Second issue maintained the enjoyment that I had it with issue one,
mm-hmm.
and so I really liked that book.
I am sticking with that for now. It's good. It's not one that's blowing me away, but I'm curious where they go and how if it's going to be a John Carter of Mars, a Flash Gordon, Adam Strange riff with an older guy, or I still want to get a feel through this first arc of tone and style. I think what they've got is good, but does it have legs? Is it going to play out or something? I don't know.
How was Inhuman?
It was okay. It didn't blow me away. They had announced it at one point, changed writers, canceled, resolicited, whatever. And it was very much a, you know, cocooned Inhuman of the Week story, if you know what I mean. Mm. Kind of like how early Smallville was the meteorite, you know, Monster of the Week type thing. I hope they don't continue with that path. But this is something that, I don't know if it's just me or if the Inhumans kind of leave a lot of people cold. I know there's some people who are huge fans of them, and I totally get that. I can see that. But I look at things like Silent War, parts of Inhumanity, and this, and a lot of people just don't care. And I can see that, too. So if you didn't get it, I don't know that you're missing much unless you're a huge, huge, huge Inhumans fan. Now, one thing I did get this week was the Worth hardcover from Arcana. And this was really interesting. It was about a hero who had mechanopathy, or I forget exactly how they phrase it. He could control machines. And he was a hero back in like the 60s, when you had a lot of machines around, before really the computer age kind of kicked in. And his powers didn't really work with computers. And it was how he went from being kind of king of the world in many respects, a really useful power, to, yeah, it's just not that useful. Everything has a computer in it now. And that kind of, again, fritzed out his powers or something. So, interesting how when you have what power could really make a big difference. So that was fun. That was worth reading. And then I had that and a few other big ticket items or bigger ticket items. Okay, by big ticket, I mean like $4.99 cover price or higher. So relatively speaking. But I picked up the director's cut of the Captain America Winter Soldier stuff. It'd been a while since I've got a director's cut, and it kind of reminded me why that was the case. Not bad, but not enough for me to think if they keep doing them that I got to keep getting them.
Yeah, the shine is off the rose for me on those as well. I was kind of psyched about them in the beginning, and then I'm not as enamored with them as I used to be.
I was hoping for a little bit more of a reveal of kind of what the initial big picture plan was for the Winter Soldier, and we got some of that, and of course it's all played out in the comics, so I know how it went. But I didn't get quite as much out of it as I was hoping for. But I think my expectations were imaginary, not founded on any basis of reality.
That's okay.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. So, yeah, I just corrected one or two things in my spreadsheet, and I think I am up one comic or one title this week. Last week I was down one as far as where I started at the beginning of the year.
Net gain of one, huh?
Yeah, so it's really fluctuating. And there's probably going to be some error on here because I may not mark everything correctly every week. But given, again, how many number ones we're seeing every month and whatnot, Sam and I were talking about that, or that episode actually will go up after this on the Mayo Report for the comics. Just how many new number ones we're getting from Marvel.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like that much stuff is getting canceled. It doesn't feel like it, anyway. And
they tend to have titles that just quietly vanish.
Yeah, it's not announced maybe as well as some of the other publishers announce their ending titles, because it doesn't seem like... I've heard a lot of high-profile titles ending.
Well, that's the thing. If it's a high-profile title, it usually doesn't end. It's usually doing all right.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
It's when it's not doing so well that it just quietly just poof, it's gone.
Now, is Stormwatch a book that didn't get its fair shake? Is it something that you should seek out? Get it maybe a collected edition of the 30 issues? Or
no.
No. Okay.
No disrespect to the creative teams, but the last arc was done by Starlin and was almost a complete aside to what the normal team would do. It was, I think, cursed by being so blatantly a Stormwatch title, like it was an affirmative action thing of the New 52. It originally had the Martian Manhunter ever so briefly in it. I think it was not the right Wildstorm title to bring out when they did. I don't know that, frankly, that I would have done anything that was so blatantly a Wildstorm title either, necessarily. The final issue, actually, I thought was really solid. 4 out of 5 or whatever, but overall not a series I think people who didn't get it need to go out of their way to go find, which is a shame.
I'm also looking forward to reading Elephant Man number 55. I haven't had a chance to read that, but that finishes up that story arc, right?
It does. I read that. Was happy. It answered a few questions I had.
Another good jumping on point in a couple months.
Yeah. Elephant Men's one of those, if they haven't been reading, they should be picking up. Archer and Armstrong that came out this week's another one of those titles. What else? Scanning down my list.
That was Quantum and Woody 9. I haven't had a chance to read that one yet either.
Very enjoyable. Liked it a lot. They did some good stuff. But in terms of kind of really ongoing titles that people may have just missed for a while, Elephant Men is definitely one worth picking up, as is Archer and Armstrong. There are a lot of other good titles out there, but none this week that just leap out to me thinking, why aren't more people reading this? I don't know that I know that I would not suggest the entire run, but I'm really enjoying what's going on in Swamp Thing right now. They're telling some interesting stories. They've finally moved well past the rot, and that title is actually working for me really well these days. Want to let people know I'm going to be at C2E2. That is the 24th, or 25th, 6th, and 7th, actually, that Friday, Saturday, Sunday this month. If anyone wants to chat with me and is going to be there, just drop me an email. We'll set up a time, and definitely would like to meet some listeners and such. Again, reminder that the online solicits should be up, so the next preview spotlight, if you see stuff you're interested in, by all means, chime in on the forum. We got anything else, or that pretty much do it?
Well, that will do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Batman Eternal number 1 from DC, Nightcrawler number 1 from Marvel, and Flash Gordon number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.